Dr. Gail Pittman is here to talk about her new children's book entitled When You Look Out the Window, How Phyllis Lyon and Del Martin Build a Community, and give us her spin on our LGBTQ issues. Hi, Gail.
Hi.
Tell us about your new children's book.
When You Look Out the Window is a picture book biography about Phyllis Lyon and Del Martin, and it really uses the city of San Francisco to tell their story, because that's where they, you know, really spent their lives together. I think it's a good example of what some writers call place-based history, where the setting is what's used to kind of convey a larger story. So the story itself shares, from Phyllis and Del's perspective, what the city was like when they met in the early 1950s and moved in together, and how it really was not a welcoming climate whatsoever. And keep in mind that, of course, the 1950s was, you know, the McCarthy era and the Red Scare and persecution of anyone who was radical or leftist or considered to be non-mainstream in some way, shape, or form, including LGBTQ people. And so through these different landmarks throughout the city, it's really an opportunity to share the mark that they made, not only on San Francisco, but on the LGBTQ community and on women through their work in the feminist movement.
What was your inspiration for writing it?
The inspiration was sort of serendipitous. So I had interviewed Phyllis quite a few years ago when I was working on a series of oral histories. I was collecting stories from LGBTQ activists throughout the country whose stories hadn't necessarily been represented in the mainstream narrative about our communities. And Phyllis and Del, I would say, are fairly well known within the San Francisco Bay Area and people who are, I would say, part of the older lesbian community. But I don't think most people today are familiar at all with Phyllis and Del. And so I had included her in my series of interviews. And I interviewed her in her home, which sits at the top of Castro Street in San Francisco. So Castro Street runs well past the Castro district of the city and goes into the hills. And she lives in this tiny little house that overlooks the entire city. And she has this big picture window that you get this beautiful panoramic view. And while I got a lot of interesting information through the interview, that image just stuck with me. You know, the image of her in her house and overlooking the entire city. And somehow I thought that her story would be better told through imagery. And I was trying to think of a way to do that. And it's interesting that writing a children's book didn't initially occur to me, considering that I was writing children's books at the time, or children's stories. But at some point it struck me that, oh, the visuals in an illustrated children's book could really be a powerful way of telling their story. And so that's really what inspired not only the storytelling, but the vehicle in which it's told.
What do you hope to accomplish with your book?
One thing that I really want to see is a more widespread sharing of our history. I mean, here in California, we have what's called the Fair Education Act, which is a requirement, a state requirement in public schools, that LGBTQ plus history be taught in various ways. But that's just California, and that's still very limited. I mean, I teach at a community college, and what I see in my students, many of whom are queer identified, many of whom are very involved in social justice efforts, it's amazing to me how few of them really know where we came from and what happened along the way. I mean, increasingly, especially with younger students, I find that they're unfamiliar with what the Stonewall riots were. They're not familiar with the Compton cafeteria riots. Increasingly, they're not even familiar with the AIDS crisis. I mean, they know what AIDS and HIV are, but they don't know really the scope of the issue and the negligence, I would say, on the part of the U.S. government in terms of intervening and, you know, putting money into finding treatments that were effective, and the magnitude of the crisis on the community and on the world. I mean, it's just amazing how absent that information is. And that's one of my inspirations for doing the work that I'm doing, especially with children's books, because I think that it's important partly for in order to get knowledge about our community and for our community to experience pride, to know who we are and know where we came from.
What is your personal commitment to LGBTQ civil rights?
I teach at a community college. I write children's books. I'm queer identified. I identify as a feminist. I've been involved in social justice efforts for quite some time. And for me, my commitment to LGBTQ plus civil rights is not just an intellectual exercise or, you know, part of the work that I do. I really see it as part of the viability of our community. I mean, we are a powerful community. We are an amazing group of people. We have such a rich and varied and diverse set of stories, and we've been marginalized and oppressed over a long, long, long period of time. And that's where it gets personal, right? Because, again, it's not just an intellectual exercise. It's not just something that, you know, I do to feel good. It's about me. It's about my life. It's about my family and my friends and my community. And we deserve the rights that everybody else has. And I think that in order for that to happen, we have to step up to the plate and be willing to fight for them.
How do you see our LGBTQ community moving forward in this Trump administration?
I think Trump's election really was a wake-up call. Because I think for a lot of folks, it was really easy to rest on our laurels and say, you know, it's so much better than it was. We've achieved marriage equality. We've achieved, you know, some transgender rights. We've got more visibility than ever. We have TV shows and movies all over the place. Like, life is pretty good. We have, you know, medications that help treat HIV that weren't available a couple decades ago. I think that it was really easy to just kind of sit back and say, okay, you know, like, we're good, you know, like, we're in an okay place. And I think that the election that took place last November really makes clear that, no, we can't afford to stop. We can't afford to rest, because we can maybe delude ourselves into thinking that there's widespread universal acceptance of LGBTQ plus people. But I think what the Trump administration has done is embolden people to basically come out of the closet and further oppress people in a much more visible way. And so this may sound a little twisted, but I think that for our community, that's really an opportunity. It's an opportunity for us to see the writing on the wall and to say, okay, you know, like, I can't afford to stay silent. I have to get involved. I need to say my piece, or, you know, become active in some way, shape, or form, in whatever way people can. And I think there's a variety of ways in which people can get involved in working towards achieving social justice.
With LGBTQ teens already 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers after facing bullying incidents, what advice would you have for these kids struggling with Trump's administration?
I'll start by sharing a quick little story. Maybe you and your listeners are familiar with the controversy that's turned into a controversy at Rocklin Academy here in California, where a teacher who had a transgender student in her kindergarten class read the book I Am Jazz in an attempt to educate the children about transgender people and what that means and so forth. And it turned into a big controversy that led to a board meeting that took place earlier this week. And I share that because it was a packed house. There were hundreds of people at this meeting. And the number of people that got up to speak who said just absolutely horrific things about transgender people and about LGBTQ people in general was horrible. I mean, it was horrifying. And the whole time I was at the meeting, I was thinking, oh my gosh, you know, like, this is hard for me to listen to, but if I were transgender, I don't think I could stomach this. And so it's very real for kids who are growing up in this administration. And so hard to give advice because it's such a powerful force, but I think that the best thing that kids can do is find community, find support wherever they can. Hopefully it's within their families. If it's not within their families, to find support in their communities, to find their local LGBT center if one exists, to call hotlines, to find other people, to find teachers who might be allies. I think that support is critical. It's an absolute lifeline for kids. And then I would also suggest, you know, depending on the age of kids, especially if we're talking about teenagers, to find ways of getting involved. Because I certainly can't speak for all teens, but I'll certainly say for myself that one thing that really makes me feel better about myself and more empowered and feeling like I have more agency is when I'm actively doing something, when I'm getting involved in fighting against injustice in some way, shape, or form. And so I would encourage kids to get involved on a, you know, a political level, as well as finding community and finding support wherever they can.
How can people get information about your new book?
Well, I have a website. It's very simple, GailPittman.com, where I have information about that book as well as others that I've written. You can find When You Look Out the Window on Amazon.com or in Barnes & Noble's, or you can check your local independent bookstore, and if they don't have it there, they can order it for you.
What other projects are you working on?
I have a few that are kind of in the pipeline. There's a book that I have written that's coming out actually just in a few weeks, in mid-October, for teens, called Feminism from A to Z. It's essentially like a I don't know, sort of a feminism 101 for teens and young adults that's written in a very user-friendly style, you know, intended to introduce readers to women's history and feminist theory and elements of the feminist movement, and also give them some activities and ways to, you know, actually take these theories and concepts and put them to work in their own lives. And so that's coming out in October from Imagination Press. And then next spring, I have a couple of books that are coming out. One is called A Church for All, which is a simple little rhyming story. It's intended to be very joyful and very whimsical about an LGBTQ plus inclusive church experience. And it's modeled after Glide Memorial Church in San Francisco, although the story itself is really meant to apply to any kind of inclusive spiritual environment. And then I have another book coming out later next year, too. It's a story about Gilbert Baker, who was the creator of the Rainbow Flag, another picture book biography.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
When people ask how I got involved in writing, because it's very different from what I do in my community college work, especially writing for children, because it kind of leads down a very interesting story. Basically, I have a friend who is a children's book writer and illustrator, and she had been offering several years ago a series of classes about writing for children. And, you know, of course, I was very supportive of her and encouraging. And she, in the very beginning of this process, was having trouble getting students. And so she, you know, one day approached me and said, oh, you know, like, you really should take this class and you'd be great. I mean, she was totally buttering up my ego. And I didn't know how to say no. You know, she's kind of in front of me saying, please take my class. And so I said, yes, I'll take your class. And then afterwards, I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, what did I just sign up for? And, you know, it was one of those things where it's like you never know where something is going to take you. I took that class, and it just was so magical. I mean, it was just so fun to do that kind of writing. And somewhere in that process, I just realized that not only is writing for children so much fun, and it just kind of exercises a totally different part of my creative brain, but there's an opportunity here. There's a real opportunity to share with children a whole series of stories that have never been shared with them before. And who knows if, you know, kids who read my books are straight or queer identified or trans or what. It's such an opportunity for them to be able to see, you know, who we are and what we're about, and to see our community portrayed in a very positive and loving and accepting way. I think that's so important.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through difficult times?
I do, as a matter of fact. Maybe you've seen it before. There's a bumper sticker, sounds so cliche, but it really is meaningful to me, that says, speak your mind even if your voice shakes. And I remember the first time that I saw that quote, and it really struck me because at the time, and this was many years ago, I hadn't really found my voice. I'd been aware of politics and social justice issues, but I hadn't really rolled up my sleeves and gotten involved full force. Largely out of fear, you know, largely out of, you know, what are people going to think, or how are people going to react, or am I going to make people angry? And there's something about that quote that just sort of, you know, kicks me back into reality. It reminds me that my job is to have integrity and to walk my talk, and that if there's something that I feel the need to say or to share, to express, it doesn't matter if I'm nervous, it doesn't matter if I'm scared, I can feel all those things and I can still do it anyway. And that carried me for many, many years.